Psalm 77 is a great place to go to in light of our study in Exodus and what's just happened in their journey at the Red Sea. There's definitely a reference to it here in Psalm 77. There is a lot to contemplate here. Perhaps we'll hit on all the high points, but this title that you find in the beginning of the psalm, it says, "For the choir director according to Yatudin," and it's a psalm of Asaph. Yatudin is, there's no J in Hebrew, by the way. I think I've said that before. This guy was the chief of one of the three choirs of the temple. He's the king's seer, and his descendants formed one of the perpetual temple choirs. So he's a big dog in the temple. This is an interesting psalm in that I guess we could summarize it as a time of intense but unspecified suffering. Prayer was sustained to the point of exhaustion, but it brings no comfort to the writer in verses 1 through 3. Finally, the trouble outweighs his ability to pray. Sleepless nights he's got for a memories of better times, 5 through 6. This only results in uneasy questioning of God in verses 7 through 9. But then a new approach is taken, pops up in his head, however it comes to him. And he remembers the past works of God, especially God's revelation of himself in holiness and greatness in verses 11 through 13. How God exercises power over people, how he identified with, himself with his people. How he dominates and uses the forces of creation, verses 16 through 18, and then how he leads people by his own presence in and through the people that he's chosen, in this case, Moses and Aaron. So the psalm, it ends abruptly. As if the psalmist says, I've solved my problem. I figured it out. That's the way forward. He's not going to be praying anymore for circumstances to be changed, nor will he recollect the things that are not what they used to be in a fitful way. But he's going to remember the works of God and the God who performed the works. So at first, he's, like I said, going through these gyrations of not being able to change anything through his prayer and even losing sleep over it. He has no doubt that God is who God is, but there's no remedy in sight, and God doesn't seem to be communicating with him. And he's, I guess you'd say, at the place where Romans 8 speaks, where the Spirit prays for us because we don't know how to pray. He doesn't know really about all of that, I wouldn't think, but in fact, it's not communicated, but He vehemently verbalizes his prayer, and he pursues that. So he's not a slouch as far as prayer is concerned. He continues to do it, and it just brings him into a place where he's more and more tired and exhausted, and he doesn't really know what to do. It's kind of interesting because there's a parallel in this and what the Israelites were up against when they were having their backs to the Red Sea. Although it wasn't as long as this looks like this took, but the sleepless hours and the fretfulness and thinking about what used to be in Egypt is all verbalized here in this psalm. But it brings no comfort, and it only brings about a questioning of God in verses 7 through 9. And the questions are not unreasonable, but he does question whether or not God is any longer loving him as God does through his covenant with his people. He actually asked in verse 8, has his loving kindness ceased forever? And this is... And then the parallel, has his promise come to an end forever in verse 8? Loving kindness is a word kesed. This is a covenant type of love. It speaks of, it's usually translated loving kindness, but it's a love that only God can have and express. He does it through the covenant. There's a real strong element of the covenant involved in that, the meaning of that word. So he's even questioning that. I don't think in a way that upsets God, but he's in a spot just like the Israelites are in, and reminiscing about old times, asking these questions. None of this gives him any help in understanding the present, and certainly not going to help him in the future. So suddenly in verse 10, there's a change, fresh turn, a remembering of God as a solution to problems, and remembering how God has dealt with more difficult situations in the past. And he knows that God has surpassing greatness and holiness, and what he's done for his people in power, through the power of his own might, providentially caring for them. So verse 10 is pretty hard to translate, but most of the new translations are fairly accurate, and they fit with the context. I don't want to get it bogged down on that right now, but... there is a contrast in verse 10 of the years ago, long ago, and the years of the right hand of the Most High. The NASB says, it's my grief that the right hand of the Most High has changed. I don't know if that's specifically accurate. The NIV has perhaps a little bit more suited to the context, but you'll have to look at those separately. But the fact that God is distinct, separate, unique, and holy, not necessarily in a moral sense, but in his being set apart, is prominent there in verse 10. He acts independently and free of any outside constraint, and he does what he will in heaven and in earth. And it's up to him how he handles the situations that we encounter in life. In fact, he led Israel, as we have already spoken, to the point where they would realize that God put them there so that they would see his mighty power in operation. That also seems to be the realization that this psalmist comes to in saying, God has allowed me to get to this place where I would see everything differently and focus on him rather than the circumstances and be satisfied that God has me in this place for a reason. And he is powerful enough to deal with any adverse circumstances that I run into. He's powerful enough to use creation And the things that we don't see in the Exodus is the personification of the waters where they trembled and they were in anguish, and then the clouds pouring out water, that's of course rain. The skies gave forth a sound, that would be thunder. Your arrows flashed here and there, that's lightning. These are all things that happened just before the waters came back in, and it's perhaps why the Egyptians were confused and why they were, why their wheels were getting stuck in the muck, in the mud. God was sending, as it were, the precursors of the sea coming in on all of them. The sound of your thunder was in the whirlwind. Perhaps there was a tornado. In verse 18, the lightnings lit up the world. The earth trembled and shook. Perhaps there was some sort of earthquaking going on. But this is definitely about verses 16 through 20, the sea coming in on not only God leading the Israelites through the sea, but the time when he let it come back in on the Egyptians. And it's there that the psalm abruptly ends. He understands at this point in time that he's actually in the same place as the Israelites were in, and that God can bring about whatever eventuality, I hate to use that word because it sounds so without purpose and without direction, just some sort of happenstance. I mean it more that he has a reason for this man being where he is, and it is to draw this man to God and memories of God and understandings of God, and that's what changes. It's not really shown where his circumstances change. He comes to another understanding, and it's because of being in this place. Perhaps otherwise he would never have come to that understanding. Perhaps he would never get to the place where he was finally able to rest in the Lord and finally able to understand that God is the deliverer. And he's done greater things. This is not going to be something, I would suppose, that is as great or as mighty or as powerful as was the deliverance of Israel. But this is how the Exodus is supposed to work. It's supposed to get us to a place where we put ourselves actually in the position of the Israelites with our backs to the sea. And God put them there. And God also made it so that the Pharaoh and the Egyptians would see them out there and see them thinking they're vulnerable and easily overcome. And so the circumstances, or the Egyptians, operate in the same realm. Here they come. And there we are in this place where we're wondering about God. And that's not the right place to be. There is, in all of this, a place for trust and dependence and faith in the Lord. And that's where this man gets to. Regardless of the circumstances, these are not circumstances he would choose, nor were these circumstances that the Israelites were in something that they would choose. But they were by God's design. And he led them to these very circumstances and provided for them in the thick of them. And this is the comfort. This is what holy God is totally free to do however he wills, and with whatever end he wills to bring about. wherever he leads, you and me, Israelites, Asaph, anybody, he will also provide. And so as is my custom, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance on you and give you peace. Lord willing, I'll see you on Sunday, if not before. Shalom.